I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Vancouver Sun celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. A new book commemorates this remarkable milestone, making headlines 100 years of the Vancouver Sun. It's a thorough, handsome, fascinating book that showcases the rich legacy of the paper, the legendary personalities who've appeared in its pages, those who've worked behind the scenes, and of course the history that the paper's reported on in the last 100 years. That the Vancouver Sun is the city's and the province's newspaper of record is without question. Shelley Frelick has had the task of writing this book and putting it together with great photographs from the archive, as well as some of the priceless memorabilia from the paper's century. With Kate Bird, they do a great sweep of the paper's history, but also that of the city and this province and the world around us. She joins me today to talk about this book, these past 100 years, and her own years at the Sun. Shelley Frelick has been a full-time staffer at the Sun since 1979. She's been a reporter on various beats and has served as an editor in various capacities, culminating in her 1999 appointment as executive editor. She returned to writing in 2003 and has penned a regular column that's one of the paper's most prominent. She's also taught at UBC School of Journalism and was a longtime chair of the Vancouver Sun's Children's Fund. You can get the book online at the Sun's website, vancouversun.com. as well as at various booksellers in town or online. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Shelley Frelick. Ms. Frelick, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph, and thank you so much for having me here. And I have to tell you, I feel right at home in your little studio surrounded by books, and it's cozy, and it's really cool here for those of you who haven't had the pleasure.
Well, I appreciate you coming in to do this. Sort of technical stuff that interests me about this book, and that's sort of in the news this week. I read in this, I have it in front of me, the February 100th edition of the paper, 100th anniversary edition of the paper, that this book was to have been published by Douglas and McIntyre.
Yes.
The Sun has published it itself.
Yeah, we did a self-publishing.
Yeah. Did you know at the time the problems that Douglas
we and McIntyre... We did not. We talked to Douglas and McIntyre, to Scotty McIntyre, back in, I think, maybe summer of 2011, and, had some discussions with him, and, you know, they were interested, and at the end of the day, it just turned out that, we decided to do it ourselves. It just didn't work out, and there was no indication. There was none of that. I mean, you know, they thought it was a great idea, and, you know, whether it fit their imprimatur or not, I don't know, but we ended up saying, you know what, no worries, we're just going to do it ourselves, and that's what we did, and we have a long history at the Vancouver Sun of book publication, as I've actually written about in the book.
I mean,
we've been publishing books for years and years and years. Yeah. Bestsellers, you know. Some of our cookbooks have sold 20,000-30,000 copies. So it wasn't an unusual thing for us to go self-publishing anyway. And let's face it, we have in-house some of the best designers and editors and in the country, so it sort of just made sense to do it anyway.
Yeah, so how does a book like this come together? I mean, how long did it take you?
Well, you know, I started working on it probably in the fall of 2011. And my first draft was just horrible. It was very, very, because what I wanted to do was, how do you take 100 years of history of a newspaper? So not just of the newspaper, it's of newspaper technology. It's also of the history of the city. It's also of the history of the world. So mm-hmm. You've got sort of four or five different levels that you're trying to amalgamate into an interesting story. And do you tell that as a single narrative? Do you do it chapter, do you take specific thing, wars, entertainment, sports, or do you do what we did, and we decided to do it by decades? It just seemed to make most sense. So when I did the first draft, it was very, very, very history-laden, because I went and did a lot of research. You know, I used a lot of, I see you've got some of the books that I've used right there.
Yeah.
I used a lot of research information, including, Chuck Davis's book, Mark Edge's book on Pacific Press, The Paperboy, all of those ones you have there, actually, I used all of those. But it was very history-laden, and it wasn't enough Vancouver Sun. So we went back at it, and when we decided that we were going to publish it for fall publication, September 2012 publication, I basically had six weeks to write it. So I got to tell you, it was...
Six weeks doesn't seem like a lot of time.
Well, 6 months would have been...
Yeah.
So it kind of trickled, I was playing around with it, we went back at it, and we were sort of deciding, what are we going to do? Are we going to publish it? How many, so you have those conversations, right? And by the time we sort of decided that we were going to do it, I really had kind of a six-week deadline. And then we had a bit of time after that to sort of go back at it. Because as you know, having looked at it, it's a book full of names and dates and events, and it's a very tricky thing, because the last thing you want is to make an error.
Yeah. So are there 100-year-old issues of the Sun available?
I have an original of the first copy of the paper. But, I mean, if you look at it the wrong way, it'll disintegrate.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I have a lot of memorabilia. I'm kind of the unofficial historian. I mean, John Mackey, as you probably know, a Sun reporter, is fantastic in terms of keeping our flame alive and writes a lot about the history of the Sun and the city, of course.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of the memorabilia. I have a lot of old newspapers, boxes and boxes of them, you know, commemorative issues. As I say, I have the original. I think I have two copies of the original 1912 paper, not in great shape. And most of the significant papers we put out, Man on the Moon, you know, the Kennedy assassination, a lot of those significant papers, I have copies of those, yeah.
When you look back at the 100 years and you know, you've been with the paper for, what, a third of the time?
I have.
Yeah.
Crazy when I think about it.
Yeah. But I mean, you're fairly objective that you can take yourself away from it. What has this paper meant to the city, to the province?
You know, it's the old saw, and, you know, I use it in the book, and, you know, we hear it again and again, but, you know, the newspaper is any newspaper, especially a Metro Daily, is considered, you know, the first rough draft of history of that area. And I think that there's that. I think that that's a very important part of it. We were writing the history of the city and the people and the demographics and the social changes as the city grew. And changed. So I think there's that. I think we represent that tie over the last 100 years. I think we have a very, very strong community commitment to Joseph. We do a lot of, we have for 100 years, do a lot of social things in the community. You know, we ran free swim classes, we built in the 20s something called the House of Hope for mentally handicapped kids. The Children's Fund over the last 30 years has collected from readers and distributed $9 million to various organizations and charities throughout BC to help kids. So there's the journalistic part of it. There's the historical part of it. We have also contributed, I think, as a community partner, because we're not just a business, we're a member of the community. The journalistic part is in many ways maybe the most important part, because one of the things you do as a newspaper is you ask the questions on behalf of the people, and you get things changed and you get things fixed. A recent example would be Daphne Bramham.
Mm-hmm.
Without Daphne Bramham and her relentless, over 10 years, her relentless hammering away at the issue of polygamy in eastern BC, the law, you know, that wouldn't be on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, arguably, you know, Jeffs wouldn't be in prison in the States without Daphne's work on that. So we're kind of the gatekeepers of that kind of thing. You know, that's why they call it Fifth Estate. I mean, that's what we do, and I think that is one of our legacies. That and the fact that I think that we've had a history and have been known throughout the century for having some pretty terrific writers and certainly cartoonists.
Yeah.
And that's our legacy, too. So a very long-winded answer to your question, but I think there's sort of layers to it. And it has to do with journalism, and it has to do with community commitment, and it has to do with making sure that we reflect history.
You get a lot of criticism online. I guess that's where you'd get it, about the paper and what it represents today. Has the Sun gotten it wrong, though, sometimes?
I would absolutely get it wrong. I mean, think about it. Every day we produce this my baby, I call it. We give birth to this thing that has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of words, and it has dozens of pictures, and it has opinion, and it has, I mean, it's kind of a, without sounding, you know, melodramatic, but it's sort of this daily miracle that we put out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you do get it wrong sometimes. But that's the beauty of a newspaper. It's also a forum for debate. And so when we get something wrong, or more particularly if we write something that people don't agree with, maybe we endorse a candidate in a provincial or federal election, and our readers don't like it, guess what? They write letters to the editor, they write op-ed pieces, there's a forum for them to do that. And they can do it online now too, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it, is that you create this social debate in a very, very public way that is healthy.
And for a long time, I mean, the Sun had obviously rivals in the city. You know, the world and the province remains a rival, even though you're owned by the same company. But when was it for the Sun that it sort of just emerged as the leading paper in the city?
So when the paper was...
That was in the 40s, right?
Yes. Yeah. When the paper was started by Black Jack McConnell in 1912, there were a number of newspapers in the market, five or six perhaps, mm-hmm. big papers. I mean, you know, circulations were like 10, 20,000, but they were big papers of the day, right? Don't forget the population when they're not mm-hmm. big. And the province was one of the leading papers, which was actually started in the late 1800s. It was the predominant, it was a broadsheet, it was a predominant paper of the day. And in the 1940s, so we came on the scene, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on in the newspaper business, and they were changing hands, and there was a half a dozen owners who were constantly sort of, it was like a chess game with newspaper ownership, mm-hmm. right? Anyway, in the 40s, there was a strike at the province. The Typographers Union went on a strike. Very, very difficult strike, violent strike. There's actually a photograph in the book yeah. that you can't believe it's like a newspaper strike. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the Sun basically picked up the 35, there was a 35,000 difference in circulation. The Sun basically went on an intensive marketing campaign when the province was on strike because they weren't publishing, and they actually picked up those 35,000 readers through varying, you know, promotions and just an mm-hmm. aggressive campaign. And when the strike was over, the province never got them back, and that basically put us into the lead as the dominant daily in the marketplace. So it was actually the result of that strike.
And then when I read this in Edge's book, when you guys were put together, the Sun and the province. The change was made that the Sun would be the broadsheet, the province would
yes.
be the tablet,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah. The province went tab, which was a good decision. I mean, at that time, don't forget, 1974, Doug Creighton started the Toronto Sun, and that was the start of really tabloids in yeah. Canada, and it went right across the country. And the reason he did that, of course, was because in the mid-1970s, basically the commuter trains came into being, and it was, you know, the tab was seen as a natural for not only that particular demographic, but for readability on commuter trains, right?
Yeah.
And it just sort of made sense here that you would have a broadsheet and a tab, and it did very well.
And so the province remains the biggest competitor to the Sun, or, I mean, do you have the commuter papers, you got the Globe and Mail now? And
you know, I get asked that a lot, and I think that in terms of newspapers, I've always seen, even though we've been owned by the same company, I've always seen the province as our biggest competitor, because it's the other biggest paper in the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, the National Post and the Globe have a very, very niche readership. And honestly, the circulation isn't huge. I don't know what the Globe's is now. Maybe mm-hmm. it's 20,000, 25,000 in BC. If I'm wrong on that, I apologize. But it's not that great. But it has a very, very sort of business Toronto-centric readership, right? Great paper. But, you know, mm-hmm. and the National Post, which we also own, same thing. So it's kind of a niche readership, not huge. So I've never seen it as a huge competitor. Saying that, however, everything's a competitor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially now in the age of the Internet. I think that the bigger competitor beyond the actual newspapers is basically, in BC, it's lifestyle.
Yeah.
I think that we compete with the weather, with the beach, with skiing. You know, there's also, we have a very large immigrant population that does not read English language newspapers, so that's a competition. I think demographics, and I think lifestyle is also a big issue. People don't have time, people are working, you know, there's a little bit of an echo issue as well. People look at a newspaper as sort of a tree, you know, so there's if you had to name them, there's a dozen that, you know, some with varying degrees of sort of severity in terms of competition for us. But I think basically there's a lifestyle, you know, we're fighting lifestyle in BC, and we're fighting, you know, a couple other pretty good papers.
Yeah. Now, you saw the books that I pulled off the shelf.
I did.
And so let's talk about some of the people that, Jack Scott, did you get to know him very well?
I didn't. He was he was before my time, but he's one of the three great Scott.
So
that's his book called Great Scott. One of the three Jacks, Jack Webster, Jack Scott, and Jack Wasserman, who sort of during the 40s and 50s and 60s, and Wasserman into the 70s because he died in 1977, who basically, I think, epitomized what the paper was known for and has been known for, and that is just really, really fantastic writing. I mean, you know the story of Hunter Thompson applying
yeah.
for a job and
yeah.
being turned down, right? And he applied for a job at the Vancouver Sun because he had heard
looking
that it was a great
like
place.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, he applied to Jack Scott
yeah.
for the job. A great place for writers. It was a newspaper that encouraged and hired really good writers, and
yeah.
so Jack Scott was certainly one of them.
So that Stuart Cates, paperboy, he was an editor, was he?
No, he was a publisher.
Publisher.
1964, after the Cromie sold the paper, he became a publisher, and he, great publisher.
Yeah.
You know, terrific. Great book, if you're interested at all in newspaper history, Canadian newspaper, because he talks a lot about Canadian newspaper
yeah.
history, great book.
And then Hutchison. Bruce Hutchison.
Well, yeah. I mean,
did you know him?
I you know, peripherally,
yeah.
the grand old man. But if you talk to somebody like Vaughn Palmer, who
he's
considers
like
Bruce his
mentor, yeah.
He was with the paper for many, many years. And, I mean, he wrote, his last column was like a month before his death. I mean, he was just a true classic journalists, newspaper men. Yeah. Just, you know, they just didn't come any better than Bruce, you know. Great writer, clear thinker, and just a work ethic, like unbelievable.
Yeah, I've got some of his books are like The Fraser, yes, and yeah. I mean, just, they stand up even today.
Yeah, wonderful.
Marjorie Nichols, I really love this book. This is her memoir.
Yes.
Mark my words.
Yes. Now, Marjorie, when I started at the paper, her and Fotheringham, Alan Fotheringham, were often little coin in the editorial pages, and oh my God, I was this like young, sort of fresh-faced rookie who, you know, scared of my own shadow, and, you know, I'd be like, Fotheringham would walk by me, and Danny Boyd would walk by me, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? But they used to fight like cats and dogs. She was one tough cookie, but again, just, you know, just a terrific columnist, because she just did not pull any punches and knew her stuff, and, you know, she was something else. So, you know, a real kind of trailblazer for women journalists, certainly at the Vancouver Sun, certainly in BC.
So she was in Victoria most of the time.
Yeah, she wrote in provincial politics. Yeah,
yeah, and then she went on. If you read the book, she went on to cover Ottawa.
Yes,
and then she died 20 years ago. She was like 40.
Yeah, she did. She was there when I started, and I can't remember how long later she died of cancer, but she was a firebrand, I gotta tell ya. I mean, holy moly. She walked through that newsroom, boy, you got out of her way.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Barrett, and certainly there's stories of the two of them.
Yeah, but she knew her stuff. I mean, that was the thing. She wasn't, I mean, you know, she knew what she was talking about, and you weren't going to win an argument with Marjorie, let me tell you.
Danny Boyd, you were friends with him?
I love Danny Boyd.
He's,
He just, I miss him every single day. Now, there's a really interesting guy who, you know, was one of sort of those columnists who, even when it wasn't as popular as it is now, of course, wrote a lot about his own personal life and his demons, mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in the book I refer to him as having a penchant for alcohol and redheads, you know. And, you know, oh my gosh, just his way with the words, he worked magic with the language. And to read him, you know, he was just a case study in how to write a column. And he would come into work every day, and he had this funny way of working. He would come in and he would decide, he wrote every day, by the way. He wrote like 5-6 columns a week.
Yeah.
And considered it, you know, not very good work ethic if you didn't do that if you were a columnist. And he would come in and he would sort of ruminate, and he would walk around, he would talk to everybody, oh, I'm thinking about this, what do you think about that? And he would do that until like about 2 or 3 o'clock. And then he would go into his office and he'd pound, 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 pound. When I started there, it was typewriters, by the way. Pound, 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 pound. And he would be done like in about 40 minutes, an hour. And then he would just go home. I mean, he was just a consummate professional. And, you know, a really, really wonderful guy. Great mentor.
And they're just great pieces. I mean, you go back and you read them. I mean,
and they stand the test of time. And I think it's interesting you said that with Bruce. Like, to be able to read Denny's work 20, 30, 40 years later, or Bruce's even longer than that, and they stand up. I mean, that really is a testimony to somebody who's just a terrific writer.
Yeah. Well, we know Alan Fotheringham from, I guess, the back page of McLean's.
Mostly McLean's, yeah.
Yeah, the front page challenge.
Sure.
But he started at the Sun, right?
He did start at the Sun, and there is some stuff on him in the book. And I didn't know him that well. He was there when I was there. I remember him walking through the newsroom in his tennis outfit all the time. He was always playing tennis.
He was always well-dressed, too, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was always well-dressed, except for when he was playing tennis, and then he'd be, you know, he'd come in through with his shorts on. But, you know, I didn't know him as well. But, again, there's another, you know, another one of those names long associated with the Vancouver Sun. He just brought this sort of work ethic you could just write a great column.
Yeah. I mean, there are people in the Sun today that are just like these guys. I mean, they're not obviously the same.
I would argue they are. I think you're going to say like a Pete McMartin.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we have some. I think Pete McMartin is arguably probably one of the finest newspaper columnists in Canada. I mean, he is a stylist. He is just a wonderful writer, and we have a whole bunch of them. I mean, again, I think the newspaper, I mean, Vaughn Palmer, political writing.
Right.
I mean, you know, you go down the list, Daphne Bramham, Steve Hume. I would argue that it's just a different generation of really good writers. And I think we've maintained that legacy over 100 years, and I'm sort of proud to be part of that. I think we've done that's what we're known for.
Yeah, Malcolm Perry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Barbara Yaffe.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the people that, the names that I enjoyed reading about, Edith Adams. Now, who is she?
Well, there was no Edith Adams, right? You know that.
Yeah.
Edith Adams and
Pennywise.
And Pennywise were names that editors came up with because they fit in a headline. Don't forget, it was a hot type when they started.
Yeah.
So the fewer words you had in the headline, the faster you could get the headline out there, right? And they weren't real people. Like behind Edith Adams, over the course of, you know, 70, 80 years that Edith Adams was in existence, it was a series of home economists and editors, but hugely actually hugely popular. I mean, when the Edith Adams Cottage opened in the 60s in the Sun Tower, thousands and thousands of women went there to take classes in cooking and sewing and, you know, how you look after a home and canning and all of those things. Hugely popular. I mean, those cookbooks that we produced over 40 or 50 years sold thousands and thousands and still sell today of copies. It was a different time, of course, you know, post-war, and you know, women stayed at home, and they were looking for help to make their dollar stretch farther and to make good meals.
Yeah, but Bob Bouchette, I remember reading about him in Fotheringham's book. He's considered a really good writer. I haven't read anything of his, but his story is fascinating. He was during the Depression, right?
It was. And you know what? I have to tell you, among the many things I discovered as I went back over and did this book and went back over the history was, were people like Bob Bouchette I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
And he was basically sort of the Danny Boyd of his day. I mean, he was a fantastic writer. He was, he had his own demons, much like Danny did.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 30s, he was called the working man's columnist because he basically was sort of what you would call left-wing columnist and stood up for the working man and wrote a lot about poverty and how the government had to change their ways to help poor people. And he went into the labor camps and he reported and lived in the labor camps and reported on what life was like in the labor camps. He ended up committing suicide, actually. He drowned himself off of Second Beach.
Yeah.
So interesting, and he was sort of one of these disheveled kind of, you know, guys who showed up late, but just got the story and wrote these wonderful, wonderful stories. So I was delighted to discover him and delighted to share him in the book because, again, part of our great legacy.
Yeah, I think Fotheringham described his suicide as he one day put stones in his pocket and walked towards Japan.
Yeah, and it wasn't reported as suicide. The police just basically said he went for a late night swim in the waters. The chilly waters took him, but yeah, he committed suicide.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, you've been at the Sun 33 years.
Yeah. Well, longer. I started in 75, actually, but in the newsroom, 33 years.
What's it like to work there?
It's awesome. Best place to work in the world. It's very different from when I walked in the doors in 1979, where it was noisy and the typewriters were going and people were yelling copy, and I thought they were yelling coffee for the first couple of weeks. They were yelling copy, and you know, there were different shifts that came in because we were publishing in the morning and we put out different editions, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And you saw all these icons walking around. It's a great place because it's a place of ideas. It's a place of news. Stuff happens and you move, and it's a place of turning around this thing every 24 hours. It's incredible. It's incredible it gets done, and it's a wonderful thing to be part of it. Very, very energizing. It's a little bit different now. It's, you know, you're using computers and it's quiet and nobody's yelling, and I miss all that, right? Because there were a lot of characters back then, and I think it's a different kind of character now. But it's still a very thoughtful place, and it's still a place where great decisions are made and great conversations take place and great arguments take place. So it's still best place in the world to work.
Yeah, and so do you work out of the office every day, or how does that
work? I don't. For the last 10 years, I have worked at home.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, I worked down there for a long time because I was in management for a long time, too. Yeah. And so, you went in every day. But no, I work from home now, so a lot more flexible.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about this paywall that's gone on around the website, and so we don't read the articles, I guess, as much as unless you're a subscriber. Is that a profitable venture thus far? Or?
Well, no. I mean, it's well documented that about, what was it, 10, 12 years ago when all the major newspapers in North America went online, there was a lot of discussion at the time. I can remember it. I can remember being in the meetings, and we decided, you know, we actually initially charged, Vancouver Sun initially charged for an online access to the paper. And then when papers like the New York Times didn't, everybody else followed suit. And I think 10 years later, they've come to the realization that, number one, it's not pulling in the revenue that they need. Number two, we've unfortunately educated maybe a brand new generation to think that information is free. It's not free.
Mm-hmm.
It costs a lot of money to put out a newspaper every day and then to put that information online. And, you know, we have to place a value on it because it is valuable. So I think that we've made great gains in getting revenue, and there are a lot of people dedicated to it in our building who are doing a wonderful job, and I think it's just a slow process, and I think we'll get there. But there's no question that the hard copy, the print paper, pays the bills.
Yeah, and you think it'll be around another 100 years?
I do think it'll be. I'm a total optimist, Joseph. I think it'll be around. I don't know what form it will be, and maybe, you know, maybe it's the circulation, you know, isn't as big now. And but I think it'll be around. I think there's a need, especially maybe in this age where there's so much information out there, for somebody to take that information and distill it and to put it in a readable form that is applicable to you. So if you live in Vancouver, where can you get the news of the day and get it in some kind of comprehensible, intelligent, and even entertaining form? And I think a newspaper fulfills that function.
Yeah. This is such a great book, and I've enjoyed the conversation today about the paper, the history. You've done a great job. Congratulations on it. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, Joseph. And again, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming in. Yeah, the book is called Making Headlines, 100 Years of the Vancouver Sun. Shelley Frelick, its author, joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.